Welcome back to the Macam in the Middle podcast, the last podcast related to Sunderland, at least a reaction podcast until after the World Cup. Of course, that starts in just about a week's time, possibly less actually. I'm not entirely sure when the first game is, but the last game for Sunderland was, of course, away to Birmingham on Friday night. Another game that was moved to Sky Sports, a game that Sunderland won 2-0 with goals from Ahmad Diallo and Ellis Sims. And as always, we'll get through what happened during the game. And we'll touch on a little bit about, you know, the season so far as we're approaching the halfway point. I think 21 games or 20 games in the season, I should say, and obviously 26 left. Yeah, 26
left after the World Cup. Because I looked at it earlier.
Yeah,
sorry,
one game in hand.
Because I looked at it earlier.
Yeah, always love a game in hand, don't we?
Of course we do. Shame we don't win them often enough.
Season. Bound to change eventually. This season's the one. But like we said there, John, 2-0 win away from home, last game before the World Cup. And every game is important to win, but I feel like a win before a sustained break is more important than most.
Yeah, I think it is, especially on the, you know, the run we're on, a bit of inconsistency. It'll give a lot of the squad, you know, confidence, and, you know, you could probably pick out single players like sort of Ellis Sims going into the break with, you know, getting on the score sheet. Ahmad Diallo looking full of confidence. So yeah, it's a good thing to go in like on a, I'd say like an all round high. You know, the obviously me and you were there. It was absolutely buzzing in the away end, and it was a very sort of poignant result, really, without trying to drum it up too much. But yeah, like you say, it's a nice break now, even though it's a bit weird. I think it's maybe come at the right time with the squad, you know, for a few tired legs to get a bit of a break, us to go through tactically and a few things and have a break, and then sort of reconvene ready to go against Millwall on December 3rd. But yes, I think we, you know, we did say, we touched on it before, I think with Kyle, and it was about not just getting 3 points, even though that is ultimately what we need to do, but to add a performance to it as well, which I personally think we did, barring, you know, a few maybe edgy moments towards the end of the game. So, and, you know, they're no slouches, Birmingham, to be fair, even though I'd say we put them to the sword. You know, it's a very good result and a very good performance.
Yeah. And obviously the performance in the ground will have probably seemed a little bit different to the performance that you saw on TV, because quite frankly, once you score a goal, it's, you kind of just switch off for the next kind of 15 minutes of the game and just celebrate the goal, which is what happened. And still got the marks on the back of my leg from it, so that's always one to remember. But when you're watching it on TV, like I say, Michael, it is a little bit different. And when I was looking at Twitter, there was a few people saying that, you know, the performance wasn't great from Sunderland. You know, there was a few mistakes even then. Obviously, we'll get into the goal that they scored. And I just realised I said it was 2-0 to Sunderland, and wasn't. It was 2-1 to Sunderland, because Birmingham did score in the second half. So I'll take that one back. But from watching it on TV, would you say the performance was a lot better than it has been in recent weeks? Obviously, you look at the Cardiff game. Couldn't have been worse than that. But taking that one out, there has been a bit of criticism about the performances, especially over 90 minutes. Over the past kind of 3 or 4 games. But it was an improvement against Birmingham, wasn't it?
When you contrast it and compare it to the Cardiff game, certainly for the first hour of that match, I think obviously that was just, we've talked on the Cardiff game enough. Personally, I think when watching the Birmingham game, I didn't think we were brilliant. I think, to be fair, you've got to give respect to Birmingham, because I think that's their first home defeat, or first defeat at St Andrews since the end of August, which I think says a lot about how well we did to win the game. Parts of our game were pretty good. When we were able to get into our rhythm and get our passages of play going, and we're able to interchange passes with each other, then I think we actually looked really good. I think we got lucky on one or two of occasions. I think obviously the first 10 minutes, Troy Deeney gets a header off the crossbar, which obviously if that's the underside of the bar, then it's 1-0 and it's a different game potentially. But again, we've had moments like that where, you know, if something happens one way or another, then it's a different match altogether. So it's nice to get that rub of the green a bit. But I think certainly in the first half, as we wore on, we started to get a bit more control of the game. And I think, and obviously, to be fair, we got lucky on a few occasions. But again, maybe you could say it's not luck. You could say that players stood up in big moments. The one that I'm thinking of in the first half is obviously that through ball to Scott Hogan, and Matt yeah. Patterson basically spreads himself as wide as possible to make the goal harder to aim at. So Yeah, I would say compared to Cardiff, it was definitely an improvement. I think we've played better than that personally, but maybe I've got a different perspective watching it on the TV as opposed to watching it in the stadium. Yes, obviously we wanted a performance, but I think ultimately after Cardiff, we just needed to get the win, yeah. In my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get through what happened in the game as quick as we can in the player rating, because like I said before we finished today, we'll touch on kind of the season so far and, you know, the best players, the best moments, whatnot. So starting with the first goal that Sunderland did score, John, obviously they had a chance early in the game, and I think it was Ahmad that forced a save from Birmingham keeper, who I think is Allsop, I think it was.
John Woody.
John Woody.
Cardiff goalkeeper, that wasn't it, Allsop. John Ruddy, of course, for Birmingham. But the first goal for Sunderland obviously came through Ahmad again. He got the assist. Watching it back, you do question what Birmingham defenders are doing, because they're just kind of letting him run rings around them. But he works a bit of space, plays through to Sims, and it's a very good finish from Sims.
Yeah, it's an excellent finish. I think you could probably strip down the whole build-up. I think Pritchard does well to hold off his man. And Diallo's somehow seems to roll four players. They're all sort of worried about him, and it's been a little bit of a frustrating thing, I think, previously, where we've had players, you know, sort of Jack Clark or Patrick Roberts, who have had sort of two or three men marking them, which sounds crazy, but if they are being marked, there is going to be space then for other people. And like you say, Diallo's got four men around him, and what the Birmingham defence are doing, I'll never know, because Ellis Sims, you know, who to be fair is a tidy finisher, has just left on his own, and you know, he slots into the bottom corner, and that's exactly the type of finish that, you know, you're going to see from him. We need to obviously provide those moments. You know, he hasn't had a lot since he's come back from injury, but there's, you know, there's definitely a player in there, and you know, it's a cracking finish, to be fair.
Yeah, and of course that made it 1-0, and I can confirm there was at least seven people on the floor around me. A couple went down the stairs, a couple of injuries here and there. It was a good goal, good finish. And I said that the kind of atmosphere around that goal, I think it was one more sense of relief because of how poor we've played recently, you know, going behind in games and having to claw our way back into the game. But take the lead, Michael, just boded well for the rest of the game.
It did. Well, these things are cliches, but I mean, one of my friends has always said to me that they're cliches because they're true, because they reflect, they're accurate to the, when you're talking about the game. And the cliche is the first goal is always the most important one in so many ways, because if Birmingham take the lead, then obviously does the confidence start to drain at that point? Do we then start to hide within ourselves? Does our game plan then go out the window? You know, so to take the lead, I think was actually, you're right, I think it was very, very important to give us, just to gain confidence, to gain momentum, change the flow of the game, and to give us the platform to do what we did in the rest of the match. You know, every time as you said yourself, we've had to crawl behind in a lot of results recently. You know, we fell behind against Cardiff, we fell behind against Luton, obviously ultimately fell behind against Burnley, even though we scored first in that. That fell behind against Blackburn, Wigan. We've fallen behind in quite a lot of fixtures and conceded the first goal more often than not, even though performances, I think, on the whole haven't been bad. But it was just nice for once to just get ourselves in front and give us the platform. And like John said, it was a very, very, very good finish. You can't complain at that, really. I mean, as you said, Birmingham's defence was just all over the place. I mean, there was at least three or four players around Ahmed Diallo, and somehow he got the ball through all of them to get to Ellis Sims. But, you know, as I'm sure you'll agree, we are not complaining in it.
We're not. Second goal, obviously, just after half-time. We've obviously made a big kind of discussion point about how Sunderland love to concede 5 minutes either side of half time, but it was this time Sunderland that scored in that period, and it was about 3 or 4 minutes after the interval, Michael, that we did take the second goal, took a 2-0 advantage, and again Ahmad with the goal. Good work from Dan Neil. I think it came from a Birmingham attack, really. Ball comes out with Dan Neil, he turns his man, plays it through with Diallo, and the trajectory of the ball was straight at me in the away end, and I thought that was going so far wide of the post, but he curls it in the far corner, and that is a very good finish. And, you know, again, we've said it a couple of times this season, and definitely for the month, but potentially for the season, you'll look back and that's another goal that'll be up there as one of the goals of the season, especially for Sunderland.
Isn't that our third potential goal of the season contender?
In the space already of a month,
Clark,
or so, yeah.
Clark against Reading, Pritchard, Huddersfield, now this one. I don't know what it is about Sunderland at the minute, but we seem to score some beautiful goals. As you touch on the goal, I mean, the the ball from Dan Neil was just exquisite. It was, this is one of the things that, yes, Dan Neil's young and he'll make errors, but these are the type of things that make the club rate him. And I'd like to think that fans should give him, because I've seen some fans go a bit hard on Dan Neil, which I personally think is very, very harsh. And I think that pass is just brilliant. And don't get me wrong, it's not just all about the pass itself. Amad Diallo still had a lot to do. When he got the ball down the right flank, he still had to cut inside, basically to get the technique right on the shot and accurately fire it. And it went in off the post, didn't it?
I don't even think it hit the post. I think it went straight in the net.
No, I know it went in the net, but I'm pretty sure. Well, maybe I'm talking rubbish then. But either way, it hit the far side of the net.
Just hit the post. I think it does.
I'll go back and watch it again in a minute. I don't need an excuse to rewatch it, but I've got one.
Yeah.
It was just great. I mean, you're right. And obviously, I've had that before when I've been at games where you think a shot's going to go well wide, and then it ends up actually going in the net. It always looks different when you're live as opposed to on TV, because obviously I had the benefit of watching it a few times on a camera angle. And I can only imagine from your perspective that if you had three or four people jumping around you for the first goal, what it would have been like for the second.
Yeah, absolutely. It was mayhem for that second goal. And
your shins are in bits.
Yeah, the back of my leg is definitely scraped to the bone.
That's what away days are made of, though, aren't they? That's what you remember.
Absolutely. I did end the game without a seat as well, ironically. That wasn't my fault.
How did you manage that?
I mean, there was someone stood behind me. Because you know what away games are like. No one, you know, is where they should be. There's someone stood behind me. We scored a second goal. He jumped on my chair and it just snaps. So luckily, we were winning. So there was no need to sit down. So I didn't need a seat. But that seat is not there for the next away game. So whoever's sitting in row 1368, that is, you know, you might not want to sit down for that game. But one thing that football teaches you, John, especially as a Sunderland fan, is to not, you know, get attached to loan players. Some in the past we've had a chance of signing. Amad Diallo is categorically not going to be signing for Sunderland on a permanent deal, because I think he cost Man United the same that the club cost Kirill Louis-Dreyfus. So the price tag is a bit out of our reach at the moment, but you can see, you're starting to see why Man United paid so much money for him.
Yeah, Man United don't sign too many bad youngsters. You know, if it's the senior players, they're probably bad ones they sign. But yeah, just a very, very good player, very technically good, maybe just struggled for confidence. He's almost like a young sort of Patrick Roberts, you know, just he's obviously, you know, he's done the rounds at a few clubs and not really maybe been loved or been given, you know, the responsibility. Whereas now, you know, if you're Patrick Roberts on Friday night, you're probably fuming that you're not starting. You know, because Diallo starts, and I think Mowbray even touched on it and said that Diallo's a bit more sort of mobile than Patrick Roberts. And even then, I think Roberts would probably be a little bit arsey about that. But in fairness, it proved right from the first. It seemed to be a massive confidence shift. Like, we've seen him in recent weeks where he's been a bit hesitant, and, you know, we think, should he shoot? Has he done the right decision? And obviously took his goal perfectly well and got an assist as well, but his all round play, he just played the game at his pace. You know, he had their left back lot on toast like all the time. Obviously it's a shame that, you know, ultimately we're gonna have to accept that he's not gonna be able to stay here, but I think it's just one of them things. We always, you know, there's always a lone player you fall in love with every season, and this year it's Amad Diallo.
Yeah. They're usually French speaking as well, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
But obviously 2-0 up, cruising in the game, Michael. Wouldn't be a Sunderland game, wouldn't be a Sunderland away game, home game, whatever game you want to label it as, without some kind of nail bite and end to the game. And I think after that second goal, Birmingham obviously stepped it up and made a few changes. Chong came on, who caused trouble. And I think Joe Bellingham went off, which, you know, for someone that's so highly rated, didn't really, can't remember him touching the ball for Birmingham, to be honest. But obviously, they stepped up the game. They got a goal, and you have to say it's from a mistake from Bailey Wright. And it's a one that you look at and think, how the hell has he missed the ball from that cross?
Yeah.
Good finish from, I think, I'm not going to try and pronounce his name, but good finish, but you've got to stop that cross. You know, the ball comes in. We didn't do enough to stop the cross initially, but to miss the clearance there as well, he's probably gone with the wrong foot as well.
Lukas Jukovic is the player that you're trying not to pronounce, so that's I can one. Do it for you. And I'm usually terrible with, I'm usually the last person you want to have a pronunciation from. But yes, Bailey Wright, even as someone who's the head of the Bailey Wright Fan Club Association, that was poor. And it's one of the mistakes that I think on the whole in recent times when Bailey Wright's played, I don't think he's actually made that many errors, but that is an error. That is on Bailey Wright, because if he gets the correct contact with that ball, then Jukovic doesn't have the chance to score the goal. And to be fair, like you say yourself, it is a very good finish, but it should never have got to that point. Everyone knows by now, I always rate keeping clean sheets. And yes, I was always, I'm basically not bothered about it because we ended up winning the game, but it made the end of the game much, much harder than it really should have been for us.
Yeah, it did. And there was obviously a few scares. There were 7 minutes added on in that second half, John, which was...
Where did he get 7 minutes from, by the way?
Generally, I have no idea where he's got 7 minutes from. And there was a nice guy behind me in the away end who, I think there was about 2 minutes left. John Ruddy just going up the corner. And I just hear a voice from behind me saying, I was at this ground when we conceded a 95th minute equaliser to Birmingham from a corner after being 2-0 up. So that was a nice reminder. And luckily, it didn't come to fruition. But we never make it easy for ourselves, do we?
No, but that's the Sunderland way. You know, as soon as you even think, you know, that you're safe and home and dry. And even my lad was like, oh, it's 2-0, we'll win now. And I was thinking, There's plenty of time left and you never know with Sunderland. You just never know. You know, we're cruising against QPR. We all know what happened.
I have to be honest, when John Ruddy went up for that corner, I did just have flashbacks to that QPR game.
I did as well, watching it back after a bit. I couldn't even look at the screen because I was thinking, not another goal.
Yeah. Probably not.
Yeah, but it's finally nice to see, you know, I think Patterson made a real crucial save on a block and sort of punched it out, and there was a bit more ruthlessness of, you know, in resolute defending. So it does show you that it is there. And to be fair, you know, doing that without, you know, the likes of Sirkin and 09, who, you know, will throw their bodies in there. You know, you've got Huggins and Trey Hume. Obviously, they're not the biggest, but for both.
I think I was looking at the squad now we have, and there's 5 starting defenders all missing from the game against Birmingham. You've got Gooch, Ballard, Elise, O'Neill and Sirkin. So you've got an entire back 5 missing. So these 4 players, probably Danny Bart. You know, you've got Niall Huggins, who hadn't played in, 14 to 16 months. He's played a full 90 minutes. Trey Hume had probably only his 5th start since he signed for the club over a year ago. And none of them looked out of place. And like you said there, they're putting the bodies on the line. I think it was Trey Hume that made a block off the line, very crucially. I don't think too many people actually really spoke about that after, but that's a game-saving clearance off the line there.
Yeah, like I said, they've, you know, for what we'd call maybe, I don't know, a second choice, you know, back 4, because none of them would, barring like Danny Bart, maybe they wouldn't start, you know, maybe not Bailey Wright. You know, we've got a first choice back 4. So for them to defend against, you know, even though they weren't great, you know, still a top 10, you know, team in Birmingham. And, you know, they've got them big lads. Obviously, Jukovic, who scored as, you know, is like a championship-like journeyman, you know, for Birmingham, and has always come and scored, and, you know, obviously did score. But, you know, to be resolute against those where we know it doesn't always happen like that, I think that really does bode well for when we get those, you know, those types of players back. And we could probably point to a lot, you know, Danny Bart stuck his head in there at every opportunity. Obviously, Bailey Wright, barring, you know, his mistake, was still solid. Huggins, again, these are small lads, you know, who had at fullback, and you could tell they were sort of targeting them. I think it was Trey Hume on the floor, and Scott Hogan went over to him and just sort of berated him in his ear, you know, sort of a young kid, and you're thinking, what are you doing, mate? But to be fair, it wasn't overawed in any way. I think we stayed down at the right times to break the play up, you know, a bit of shithousery finally. So it does bode well, but you do just think, like, if we'd have had a full bit squad, I think we'd definitely be looking, you know, a lot higher than we are now.
Yeah. Player ratings, we'll smash through very quickly before we move on to, you know, kind of looking at the season so far. Michael, starting with Patterson for you.
I'm going to go with an 8. I think Patterson was instrumental, I think, in this result, because again, like I alluded to before with the Scott Hawken save in the first half. And like John said, I think it was the save from Deion Sanderson in the second. That's a bit, He had next to no time to react to that second save and managed to make it impeccably. So I think without him, part of me thinks we wouldn't have won the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Trey Hume, John, who I am remarkable seeing how many headers he wins for someone who's, you know, sub 6 foot.
Yeah, I'll probably go over seven. I thought he was solid. You know, there's always this subconscious worry when he starts thinking, oh, is he a little bit out of his depth? But then he comes up and he's solid. He was solid going forward. He was strong in the tackle and he fairly decent on the ball as well. And I think we've plucked such a good player. But yeah, I was relatively impressed, to be fair.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, you've talked about how little he's actually played for Sunderland since signing. He's still young. I don't think I've ever seen a player so young look so comfortable in everything that he does. You know, defensively, going forward, winning the balls in the air. Everything he does, that he just seems so kind of laid back about it.
Yeah, that's what you want. You know, you obviously we're signing these players and you think maybe they're, you know, a bit overawed. They can be, you know, with the crowds and the pressure. And he just seems to, you know, to take it in a stride and not be, you know, overawed. I think he's exactly the type of player that we need. And fair play to the, you know, the scouting team and the recruitment team. So, you know, number one, find him, and number two, actually get him here.
Yeah. Billy Wright, Michael.
I agree with John's assessment before when he said that aside from the error, he was solid, and I agree. However, he made the error which led to the goal. I'd probably go with a six, being very harsh. But because I think without the error, I think he goes to about a seven, maybe even possibly an eight. But I think I have to be objective here. Yeah, I think I gave him the goal with a six. Made the error for the goal, but otherwise didn't put much of a foot wrong for me.
Yeah. Alongside him, obviously, Danny Bart again, John.
Yeah, I'd probably go with an eight for Danny Bart. I thought he headed everything away. Yeah. He will stick his head in at any point, you know, to literally protect that goal. Obviously, he's a leader with, you know, a lot of youngsters in that team. And just, again, another one of those players, you know, we've been crying out for years. Now we finally got him. And it's like we could have done with this player like 4 years. I know it's easy to say, you know, 4 years ago, but what a, you know, an absolute solid man mounting defender. And yeah, I thought he was very good and definitely a massive contributor to, you know, because they played a lot of balls into the box. And all I remember is him just heading them away.
Yeah. At left back, obviously, Niall Huggins, who I saw play on Monday night, and, you know, he looked very good for 23s. It's his first start for the first team, what I think is, I think someone said 14 months, possibly even longer than that, Michael. He came in, he played the full 90 minutes, which I think people were a little bit surprised of, but quite frankly, we have no one else to play in that position with so many injury suspensions. And like I said to John there, five defenders missing for the game on Friday. But, you know, he did look a little bit shaky at times, but, you know, like I said, he hasn't played in, you know, a year and a half. You know, he's still a young player. He hasn't played too much first team football wherever he's been. He didn't look too out of place, to the point where you're going to write him off.
No, he didn't. I agree with that. I think the last time he played was probably when we beat Cheltenham 5-0. I think it was like late September last year. So it's roughly 14 months. Or it's at the very least, it's over 13 months. It's well over, either way, it's well over a year. And I think you got a feel for the guy because there was a horror injury that he had, which kept him out for such a long time. So to come back, obviously, to even put in a... Even just playing, I think would have probably been an accolade in itself in some ways. But to play all right, Arthur. I mean, there was a couple of times he did look shaky. I agree. There was one or two times in the first half where I think he was a little, I don't know what the right word here is, maybe a little overconfident because he was trying to overplay it a little bit. And obviously we got caught out a couple of times. Thankfully, nothing came of his mistakes. But as the game grew on, he grew into the role much better. So I'd go with the sticks just because I agree he was shaky at times at the start. But as the game grew on, he got a lot better. And fair play to him after how long he's been out for.
Yeah. Moving on to midfield, John, start with Dan Neil. Obviously got the assist for the second goal.
Yeah, I'd probably go with an eight, actually. I thought he was, you know, as much as I love him, you know, recent weeks, he's probably really frustrated me, although I won't have a bad word said against him. But yeah, I thought he was really good. I thought he put in some really good tackles. His tracking back was fantastic. I think people probably wouldn't notice, you know, but he did protect the fullbacks quite a lot. Obviously provided the assist after a lovely turn that actually worked and got himself out of trouble. You know, and then a defence splitting pass, and yeah, I thought he was excellent, to be fair.
Yeah, and obviously alongside him, Michael, Corey Evans.
I'll go with a seven. I think we miss. I think obviously it's a pretty big talking point from the Cardiff game. We missed his experience, and I think at times when we were under the cosh, he helped calm things down. It basically like to the midfield what Danny Bart is to the defence, really. So yeah, good solid seven for Corey Evans. We definitely did miss him.
Yeah. Into the attack, John started with Jack Clark, who I thought had a very, very frustrating game.
Yeah, I'll probably have to go for five. Jack Clark, I don't think anything came off for him at all. I'm thinking the first half, they looked for him down on the wing. He couldn't even control the ball. He didn't go in for any headers, not that that's his game. I don't remember him beating anybody, especially the first half. Second half, I think he must have had himself on a coupon to win a penalty, because that's what we tried to do. And again, that didn't even come off either. And it's almost if it's not really working and he's getting a bit frustrated, it takes away his game, because on his day, he's a fantastic footballer. But yeah, I was not impressed one little bit with him yesterday. And you do have to wonder, maybe sometimes do we not bring him off and, put Diallo that side, because obviously Diallo can go sort of either way, and Patrick Rock's on the other side. So maybe food for
Bennett as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, maybe food for thought, sort of going forward just to give him that slight kick up the arse. But yeah, nothing to worry about.
Yeah, and obviously had that chance very late on in the game as well, which thankfully wasn't there. Match deciding moment. It was a great tackle afterwards, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, he should have scored that. He should have booted it. It'd have gone in. But.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Moving on to the other side, though, Michael, of course, Ahmad got the goal, got the assist. And I love his little dance after the end of the game when he comes to the away fans.
Yeah, probably that was great.
Favourite thing from the entire game. And he did it for about 2 minutes straight, I think it was. So. Like I said before, you're starting to see the type of player he is. He's going to go back to Man United next season and probably break into the first team, whether that's as a first team option, whether he's going to be a backup to someone like, well, Garnacho at this point, actually, isn't it? He's playing very well for their first team at the moment, but he's going to go back. He's going to be an important player for them. But for as long as he's here, he's going to play a vital part in, well, wherever we finish come the end of the season.
Spot on, completely agree. We have to accept that there is very little chance. The only way I could see him being here next season is on loan again if we get up to the Premier League this season, which is probably unlikely. So most likely he's not going to be here next year. But while he is here, make the most of him. As for his performance, I'd go with an 8. I think the funny thing is actually, because I looked at one of the videos on Instagram, and we all know the Ahmad Diallo chant. The non-kid friendly version, but and I think that was getting played in the background, and Ahmad was dancing to it, and I was thinking, do not pan to his face, because he'll keep on, because you'll just have the footage of him just responding to that chant. But his performance was good, got the assist for the first goal, got a very, very good second goal, and it's just growing with more and more confidence each game as it goes on. He is getting better, and as you said, it's evident as to why Man United paid so much money for him.
Yeah. In the middle of the attacking three, just behind the striker, John, of course, Alex Pritchard again didn't get a contribution to either of the goals, but like we said before, he played a big part in the opening goal and played quite a big part for Sunderland throughout the game.
Yeah, I'd probably go over 7. I thought he worked really hard. Not too much came off, but it did help us sort of manage the game a little bit. And again, there was a little bit of what we'll call shithousery again, just sort of, trying to piss a few of their players off, and, a few of them were biting. So that's, you've got to respect that a little bit, because, people do it to us when, teams are beating us and they're wasting time. And, I thought it was quite an experienced performance without really, being sort of having real quality. But yeah, I'll probably go up 7.
Yeah. And last but not least, Ellis Sims, Michael, obviously got his goal.
7 for me. I think the more he gets back fit, the better he'll become. Very good composed finish for the first goal, and played his part and throughout the whole game.
Yeah. Man of the match, I would probably err on the side of Ahmad, and I think based off Michael's ratings, he would agree with that. But 2 8s for you, John. Dan Neil and Ahmad, which one are you picking?
Yeah, I'll probably have to go with Ahmad. And I actually touched his player of the match award after the game. So that's, I don't know, because some claim
thank
to fame.
Thank goodness you said player
of the match award. I was going to say
that was on course of sounding something much more not appropriate.
No, it's all kid friendly. Come on.
But like we said, that is the game covered. And now we're going into the World Cup break. Rather unfortunately, because I think I've made it clear, I just can't stand in national football in general. But it is what it is. And like we said, probably a good thing for Sunderland with so many players out injured, practically a full start 11. Like we said, five defenders missing, four of which were injured. You've got Ross Stewart, who hopefully comes back after the World Cup and, you know, starts easing himself back into the first team and helps us push back up the table. But as it stands, John, we are 15th. Like we said, game in hand. So take that with a pinch of salt. And 4 points from the playoff positions, you know, very similar goal difference to the rest of the teams up there. But at the same point, 4 points from 23rd, I think it is. 22nd, 4 points from 22nd. So very much mid-table. Second half of the season can certainly go either way. But had someone said at this point last year that, you know, 20 games into the championship season, you're going to lose your main striker, your backup striker is going to get injured for a couple of months, you're going to have, you know, two of your starting centre-backs injured, your right-back's going to get injured, but you're still going to be mid-table, you'd probably laugh. But that is a very good position to be in at this point, regardless of what people think.
Yeah, I think if you weigh literally everything up of what's happened, you know, playing sort of 5-6 games without, you know, a striker, I think any team's going to really struggle. And to be fair, we did find a way of keeping those points, you know, ticking over. It could have just gone, you know, lose, odd draw. You know, we know the strikers are the difference in those games at, like, you know, your Blackpool and your Prestons. And the players that we are missing, we know are, you know, almost guaranteed, you know, I'd say they are guaranteed starters. You know, they do make a massive difference. Obviously, Ballard was on fire, you know, where Serkin got injured and you're worried, can Elise do it? And then, you know, Elise comes in, you're thinking, well, Serkin probably won't get back in if Elise's playing so well. Stewart and Sims, you know, playing fantastically together, and you can play individually, you can play them up front, you know, as well. And I think that if we had had them, I think we're looking at a good season. But I don't think it's about where we are now. Obviously, we'll take it where we are. Obviously, it's where we are at the end of the season. If we can add one or two in January, I think that's the plan. You know, we'll get a few of the younger players maybe up to speed a tiny bit more, your Bars and your Michus. Obviously, see what Bennett does at the World Cup, and, you know, will that give him a bit of a boost when he comes back and get those injured players back? And I don't see any reason why, you know, the playoffs shouldn't be the target. Yes, if we fall just short, that's what happens. But, you know, the squad we've got, obviously the squad we've had, sorry, going into where we are now, you know, you've probably got to take your hat off to Tony Mowbray. You know, it could have, we know as Sunderland fans, it could have been an absolute abomination. You know, we've missed one or two players in years gone by, and it's like, well, we don't know what to do. There's no different plan. What, you know, where are we going with it? But now there obviously there is a plan. We've not forward a bit, but obviously we've had to deal with sticky situations. But I think we've done okay, and we're in a decent enough position. You know, a couple of wins puts you in the playoffs, you know. And I think once we get those players back, I don't think we're going to lose, you know, too many on the bounce. And now it's about, can we find that consistency of winning a few games on the bounce? And that's the difference of, you know, the turn of Christmas is getting us into the playoffs and staying in the playoffs.
Yeah. And obviously between now and January, Michael, there is still a few games. I'm not sure how many off the top of my head, but I think Sunderland are back.
I think it's five.
Yeah, so you've still got quite a few games between now and then, and obviously league position come January could be completely different, for good or for the worse. You know, say you pick a couple of wins out between now and then, does it put pressure on, you know, the likes of Kivalry Dreyfus, Speakman, to invest more in the squad than they potentially would have? If we are in contention for, you know, a top six place, if, you know, like I say, we're 4 points off it at the minute, if you're in a similar position come January, does that kind of heap the pressure on them to invest more than what they were willing to originally?
I think that depends on how December goes. I think if you win enough games, I mean, just say, for example, Millwall, that's a game in hand, really, from over half of the division, in fact, for probably three quarters of the division. So say you beat Millwall. Well, OK, let's go for argument's sake. Say we beat Millwall on December the 3rd. Then we would be 1 point off the playoffs. So we jump up to 10th. If we win. So then you think, okay, if you can stay in contention, like John said, it's a funny one, because I think obviously the minimum I'm trying hard not to get carried away with it, because my minimum expectation is consolidation, which I've consistently stuck with since the start of the season. But you look at it, and if you look at the step up to the league, it's not been what I thought it would be. I think it's actually a lot more doable for us to finish in the playoffs than what I originally thought. The way I look at it is, if you get into January, why not go for it a bit? I think I don't want us to go out and spunk loads of money and try and break the bank to bring players in. But I think if you, within reason and being sensible, I don't see any reason why the recruitment team shouldn't be looking at it. They must themselves have looked at the championship and gone, this isn't what we thought was going to be. We're actually handling this quite well. There's no reason why you can't push for the top six in it. I mean, look at it. Millwall's in the top six. I'm not being funny. If Millwall and QPR and Preston and Luton can compete for the top six and Coventry, then why can't Sunderland? We've got to play. Our squad has been in nearly every game, and there's only really, with the exception of probably a handful of, you can count on one hand the amount of poor halves of football we've had. So yeah, it depends, because people's expectations change, don't they? For the start of the season, if you look particularly after, say, 10 games ago, we were in the top six, but obviously it was only 10 games in. So therefore, people's expectations start to go up. So to answer your question, after I've waffled on for 5 minutes, I think if we're in contention by January, then yes, I think the recruitment team should be looking to maybe just try and push a few good players through the door. And then the second half of the season is not a free hit, but you look at it and go, all right, push for the top six. If we finish in it, fantastic. If we don't finish in it, then no harm done there. But it would obviously, but if expectations aren't raised for the second half of this season, they'll definitely be raised ahead of next.
Yeah. And obviously, I think looking ahead to January, obviously still plenty of time to go there, and God forbid we don't get any more injuries between now and then, John. But there's still probably two, possibly three positions that are an absolute must for Sunderland to bring in, regardless what the expectations or goals are this season. Whether you want to, you know, win the league, top six, finish top ten, you've got to bring another striker in. You know, we've seen how much of a struggle and how much of a kind of slog it's been without Sims, without Stewart, and God forbid we wouldn't want to go through that again. We've said for a while now we need a kind of big midfielder, someone to play if Evans isn't fit or if he needs a rest or if he's suspended. At the minute, we haven't really got a player to fill that position. Someone, you know, 6 foot plus who will win the ball, bully the opposition off the ball, and possibly a fullback as well. You know, we've got Sirkin after that. We haven't really got a natural left back. So there's still a few areas of the squad which, like I say, regardless of expectation, need to be added on in January.
Yeah, definitely. We all know, you know, the main one is, you know, the striker. I think that has to be a real, you know, a real priority. Because obviously, if you're going to try and shoehorn Sims and Stewart in, you know, you want someone else to come off with a different dynamic, you know, off the bench and make a difference, you know, if games are tight. Totally agree again with the midfield. I think we do need someone in there. I'd like someone, you know, I'd like a midfield Danny Bart, I'd be fine, you know, just someone to sit in there whilst, you know, the rest of the, you know, the beautiful footballers, as Tony Mowbray called them, you know, can do their thing whilst we've got someone there, because we know Corey Evans isn't going to last, you know, every single game, sort of, you know, Tuesday, Saturday. And yeah, again, I agree with the fullback. Only thing maybe you could say to that is if Huggins is going to stay fit, which he could do. Obviously, he played, you know, what would call out of position, didn't he, on Friday night, and played at left back and didn't really look out of place. But maybe we can, you know, maybe we can add, you know, a bit of experience there to keep Sirkin on his toes, and we know he's quite partial to a suspension and an injury. But yeah, I think if we do that, there might be one or two cases for, you know, sort of loan deals for one or two of the youngsters to go out, you know, and sort of ready to go again next season.
Yeah. Last but not least, I'm gonna give three questions to you both. Best player so far this season for Sunderland. Kind of biggest surprise player, someone that you thought wouldn't perform as well as possibly have done this season, and goal of the season so far, which I think is probably going to narrow down to three, maybe four so far. Starting with you, Michael, best player so far this season for Sunderland?
Well, obviously, in the games that I've watched him, Ross Stewart would have been up there, but I can't really put that because he's been missing for half the games. So it's got to be Danny Bart. Danny Bart has just been a colossal mountain at the back, and without him, I dread to think how many more goals we've conceded.
Yeah, that's fair. John, best player so far?
I'd probably have to agree. You know, for consistency from start to finish, you know, he's been fantastic. I can't really put any real consistency on anyone else. I think,
I suppose Luke O'Neill could be up there, which I think would trigger a few people, but I think he's in with a fair shout.
Yeah, you know, and again, he might be the surprise one, because people are thinking, oh, can he make the step up? And, you know, he doesn't really look out of place. Wherever you put him, he will just give you a 7 out of 10 and puts his body on the line and does okay, whether it's fullback, you know, centre-back, back in a 3. But yeah, I think for overall consistency of playing every game, like we said, Ross Stewart probably would have been if he wasn't injured. But I think a lot of the others, you know, sort of Roberts and Clark and, you know, have maybe shown inconsistency. Pritchard the same. I think the one real standout, you know, is Danny Bart at the back. You know, I can't really put my finger on anyone else who's been, you know, over that whole season, which is what we're judging it on.
Yeah, that's fair. Michael, the player that you perhaps had less expectation for this season compared to what they have actually achieved. And I think there's a few players, like Bron said there, Luke O'Neill could be up there. Anthony Patterson, who, you know, this time last year, I think was playing non-league football. I think it was with Notts County.
Yes, he
I think
was.
They were non-league. Obviously, he came in and, you know, he certainly made that number one shirt his own. Corey Evans, he could be up there as well. But if you had to pick one player that has surprised the most this season, for the good, of course.
There's two players that I think aren't mine. It's hard picking between the two of them. One you've just mentioned is Luke O'Neill. And the other one, although to an extent I'm not as surprised, it's Jack Clark, because there was obviously a lot of... when we were looking at getting him permanently in the summer, there was quite a few fans that were sort of going, not so sure about that. Don't think he did. Oh, and that's sort of different. They're entitled to that opinion. But for me, I've always said that I thought, no, actually, I think there is a player in Jack Clark, and I think he's definitely championship quality. If similar to Patrick Roberts, like I said all those months ago, give him a home, see what he can do. And although he's had some frustrating games, I think on the whole he's been one of our best players. I'm probably just going to go with Luke O'Neill, only because I think Jack Clark, I knew, had that in him. I always thought had that these type of performances, when he's been on form, has had that in him. Luke O'Neill, to be honest, I didn't think would feature as prominent a role as he has. And to not only feature as well as consistently as he has, but to not look out of place and to be actually quite reliable, I think it says a lot when people were devastated he was missing for the Birmingham game through suspension. So I'd go with Luke O'Neill just. But you're right, there are a few players in that category.
Yeah. I generally hadn't realised how long Luke O'Neill had been at Sunderland. I think it's 5 years since he signed for us.
This is his fifth season, isn't it? Because he signed at the start of the first League One season, didn't he?
Yeah. That's a long time. I didn't even realise he'd been here that long.
Nor did I. I realised that a while back. I was like, goodness me, he's been here for 5 years. Oh, no way.
So I think he's about 27, 28 years old now. And I think we signed him when he was 22, 23.
That's an even bigger shock, because I'm sure there wasn't he like, I thought he was like 22, 23 when we signed him.
Yeah,
And then you just reminded me he was like 28. He's like late 20s at this point.
Yeah.
Goodness me. That's
been here for a long time. I'd have to check, but I feel like he's probably already up there with one of Sunderland's longest serving players, especially in recent times, at least anyway. But moving on, John, player that has surprised you the most this season?
I think I'll probably have to go with Patterson. Like we say, where he's come from in a whole year, and, you know, start of last season was, you know, third choice, and we're talking about a goalkeeper from Bayern Munich and, you know, championship, you know, player in Lee Birch, you know, who's played for Coventry for quite a long time. You know, to come full circle and, you know, be number one and see both of those two off, you know, Lee Birch could have probably easily stayed here. You know, I'm sure the club would have offered him a deal, but, you know, with the way Patterson's gone, and obviously Hoffman is not, you know, not coming back at all. You know, that's testament to Patterson, and, you know, his performances this season have been, I think he's growing. Obviously he's still very, very young, but he seems to be growing, you know, in each performance. Obviously early on there was, you know, he couldn't really, you know, command his area, you know, in coming for crosses and those types of things. But he, you know, he seems to be working on it, seems to be getting better, seems, you know, just watching him Friday coming out and just, you know, spreading himself, being brave and, you know, bollocking off his players and, you know, those are the types of things you maybe wouldn't have seen from him. So he really is growing into that. And there's always that worry, you know, with a young player who's obviously, you know, a local lad, you know, can he handle the pressure? Can he step it up? You know, because obviously you know, Dan Neil can fluctuate, Embleton the same. You know that sometimes the local lads are maybe the target because they are local lads. But for him to step up and what I'd say is a key part, you know, with the team now, for me, it has to be Patterson. But, you know, you could probably name, like I say, Luke 09. Again, you were always worried, would he step up? And to me, you know, he has. You know, you're probably worried, can other players step up? And no one's really looked out of place, you know, at all. So it's testament to the squad we've got, I think.
Yeah. And last but not least, this is probably the most rhetorical question ever. But goal of the season so far, Michael, is, like I said, there's really three that you can look at and make a case for. But I'm going to be totally honest, I think there's only really one. But we'll see where it goes.
There is one. And it's obviously going to be Jack Clark against Reading. There's just no competition. I mean, don't get me wrong, the Pritchard Huddersfield goal and Ahmad's on Friday was both were very, very good goals and both full of great quality. But this is one of the best Sunderland goals. I mean, and obviously, for context, since I've been into football for about 11 years now, this is easily probably one of the best Sunderland goals I've ever seen. And obviously, the technique in the passing, the crispness of the passing, the fluidity of the passing, everything is, you can just tell the players were confident and you could tell that I remember watching the game in the pub actually, and I didn't realise how good a goal it was live because I was focused on just trying to score it. But when I looked at it back, I thought, oh, that's a good goal. It's not the type of goal you'd associate with Sunderland. It's just not the... It's never been the type of goal we score. If there's going to be a min goal, it's going to be someone scoring a freak goal from 25 yards. But this is just great. And I'll be honest, I'll be astounded if this does not win goal of the season. It's at least got to be in contention for it come May.
I think all three of them will be up there as well, to be honest. And I think certainly, picking Sunderland's goal of the season, even if it was just half goal of the season so far, it would be quite a hard one to pick, but hopefully plenty more of that to come in the second half of the season when everyone's back fit. We've got players to score the goals at the end of it. But John, goal of the season so far?
Yeah, I think we all know, don't we? You know, that ring. I've got to do a quick shout out for Lyndon Gooch against Sheffield United because that was lovely. Well, yeah. You know, I'm sure he's fuming that, you know, we've scored these goals. You know, the goals do just keep... You know, they're not flukes. They're obviously things we work on, and we've got such good technical players. And, you know, the no disrespect, but the shit we've had in a lot of years gone by, we're talking sort of 5, 6, 7 years, you know, where some of them couldn't string a pass together. And, you know, just from goalkeeper, you know, you're talking about local lads in there as well. So not like, you know, players we brought in for 10 million, you know, it's just silky football, and it's not even just the passing, it's the movement. You know, the passing, you know, is quite an easy thing, but the movement just to move off those players, those Reading players, I'm telling you now, do not know what's hit them. They haven't got a clue where to go, and that goes from when it's flicked down the wing, when it's flicked into the middle, to Pritchard playing it out wide. Dan Neil's already gone. Their defender hasn't a clue where Dan Neil is. And then obviously Jack Clark sends his defender, you know, the other way. And, you know, even the commentator says you're hoping that, you know, he bangs it in. And to be fair, I'll be honest, watching it, I was probably really emotional. And I was thinking, I was literally like, oh my God, what have I just watched? Because we know we've watched some absolute shite. And it's good to see that it wasn't a fluke. You know, we have backed that up with similar goals and we play some really good football. So, you know, I don't think we're under any illusion that is not going to win, you know, goal of the season, because it's just fantastic football. And I'm almost gutted that I was supposed to go to Reading, but I couldn't get a ticket in the end. But it would have been nice to see it live. But I'll happily contribute to, you know, the 15 million views it's had. I think 14 and a half are my views, because I will regularly watch it most weeks. So yeah, it's fantastic goal. And like we say, long may those goals come.
Yeah,
you know what, right? It's honestly just incredible the amount of people, even on social media, on Twitter, when that goal happened, the amount of neutrals that were tuning into that. And I do wonder whether a lot of it is because of, like John said, the shite we've had to put up with for 5, 6 years on the trot, back relegations, worst period of our history, 4 years in League One. The big story is Sunderland. But I think that's a way of announcing Sunderland's back and hopefully on the up. Just a quick one for unsung goal, probably Jack Clark against Rotherham was another one where you know, Ross Stewart gave him the ball and he took on basically half the Rotherham team, left them for dead. But it's just nice for once to see a Sunderland team so confident goal scoring wise. And yes, I'm someone who prides on clean sheets, but some of the goals we've scored this season, some of the football we've played has just been superb so far. May it continue.
I think it's going to be fun come the end of the season to watch a nice 10-minute long video of, you know, Sunderland's goals of the season from the club. And I think it's fair to say that Sunderland will have a on this day post kind of secured for the next 20 years with that goal against Reading. So, you know, that's definitely one to look out for the next, well, for the foreseeable future. But that is all of it for today. And like I said, it's the World Cup coming up. Sunderland's next game is less than 3 weeks away now. Obviously, Millwall at home. It was 3 weeks on Saturday, just gone. So not that long of a break, thankfully, for the Championship. I think Premier League is a little bit longer than that for that to come back. But of course, we don't have to worry about that for an extra season. So there's a bonus for that. But we'll try and get a podcast out between now and that Millwall game, whether it's covering the World Cup or something to do with Sunderland, whatever it may be. We'll have something out, possibly one or two between then. But until that, we will see you later.
That's all, folks.